I would tell people, whoever is thinking that networking is so intense, that you already have a network, you know, your friends and your family. We all have that to start with. And just to look at it, like if you were to work in an office, you don't necessarily choose the colleagues that are sitting next to you, but networking, you can actually choose the colleagues surrounding you.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. For episode 91, we are joined by creative producer and founder of I Like Networking, Isabel Sachs. I Like Networking is a social enterprise dedicated to supporting women and those who identify as non-binary to thrive in their creative careers. And with a very similar end game to Greater Than 11%, they are ultimately working towards building a more diverse and equal creative industries. Originally from Brazil, and early in her career, Isabel set up an award-winning cultural agency in her homeland, which she grew into a huge success with it producing 50 plus events a year, including tours, managing artists, and a theatre company. But in 2015, she decided to sell the business and move to London. She worked for a number of companies in her capacity as a creative producer within the arts, cultural, and entertainment sectors. But when the COVID pandemic hit in 2020, she was made redundant. Experiencing the direct impact that the government's lockdown measures had on her and witnessing the hardship that was rippling out across the UK cultural industries, she decided she needed to get involved, to do something that would help others and also bring about change. To date, I Like Networking has established a mentoring scheme, and there have been 150 plus mentees that have received support. There is an online community of approximately 30,000 people actively engaging with the platform. There's been a podcast series and there has been numerous events. It's been a busy couple of years. In 2021, Isabel was listed as one of the top 21 influential women for Startups magazine. And in the same year, I Like Networking won a DNAD Side Hustle Award. Isabel, I am so excited to talk to you, learn more about your career and all the amazing things coming up for I Like Networking. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you so much, Renee. I'm so excited to be here.
So I want to get going straight away. And I'm wondering if you can maybe talk about the creative producer part of your role and how that is connected with you founding I Like Networking.
So I always found it really hard to describe what I did before because I started working in the creative industries when I was, I don't know, 17 or 18. So it's been going to be almost 18 years now. Been a while. So I was, you know, serving coffee in film sets and doing bits and bobs and things like that. And I ended up in production because I was very impatient and I like to get things done and like get things moving, basically. And I'm not very talented for anything creative, essentially. Like I failed calligraphy, I failed art class, like I failed, I like don't have a lot of artistic talent. Even though I thought I was going to be the next Mick Jagger, but that dream was crushed pretty early on. No one wants to hear me singing. It's not great, not even in karaoke. With that said, when I started working as a producer, I did everything and was also sort of involved in the creative decisions. There wasn't a term to call yourself, so I just called myself a producer. In Brazil, that's what the type of agency that I had was called, o produtora cultural, and it's like a cultural producer. And here is more considered like a creative producer. But basically, I think it's just someone who knows how to get things done from A to B. So artists will come to you with an idea and be like, let's have like a pink elephant dancing on the stage. And you're like, okay, first of all, like Excel spreadsheet shows up in your brain. You know how much it's going to cost? Where is it going to source? At what time does you need to start bringing the elephant in? Like all those steps start to get clearer in my mind. I don't know if I just trained a lot because I was doing this for a long time or if I had some type of aptitude for that. According to my friend who gave me one of my first opportunities in the business is because I used to throw a lot of parties and trips for all my friends and was used to like feeding a lot of people on a low budget. So I had signs of a good producer early on. But I think that's where kind of like it comes in and I don't actually know how to call myself almost anything else. But, you know, I think a producer is just someone who really gets things done without as much as possible with respecting an artistic vision or a grand plan ahead. And that was really important when I was starting Ally Networking, because I had this idea and there were all these things to do, but I really need to have something concrete to work on. I can't just be on the field of ideas because that stresses me out. I want to see like action and results and, you know, activity. I think that is part of my role in understanding where to go, what are the steps, and actually breaking down big problems in smaller actionable steps, which I do much better professionally than, you know, personally, I have to say. I think this is how it is.
I often think that as well. It's just like, if only I could apply my professional self to my private life, that'd be a completely different spot. But yeah, that's amazing. And I'm wondering how that kind of creative producing and that kind of ability to connect people, to plan things, etc., how that directly correlates to you founding Ally Networking. Because obviously I mentioned, like, it came out of the, not out of the pandemic, but came out of your experience and that moment in time. And I wonder maybe a little bit of back history about how it kind of arrived in your mind and how you've taken it forward.
It really came from the pandemic, when I was doing this big project in a music festival with actually someone who I had met doing a project for in Brazil ages ago. So a connection that I had sort of kept because, you know, I like networking. It was like, but I was a sort of like a freelance in that project, and obviously working for music festivals in April 2020 was not the best idea, you know. Did not pan out very well for me at that stage. And I had a lot of time in my hands. And so I always tell people that for a month, I did a lot of Netflix and crying. There was no chill involved. The whole world was crumbling. And I thought my LinkedIn was just like a job graveyard. It was just a disaster after another. Like, my whole sort of network really was in shambles. Like, the few people that were holding on to jobs were really stressed and know what to do. No one was hiring, people were freaking out. And I remember one time talking to a friend of mine who is in film, but is a freelancer as well, said, how am I going to even get a job now? Because everything happens through connections. And she said, I would literally pay someone to help me network. And we were discussing how hard it was to establish connections in the beginning of our careers, especially, and to be taken seriously and all those things that happen, and how to get progress and how everything you need to know people for better or worse. And I just kind of realized, oh, I have all these people also checking in on me and asking how I am and sending me jobs and sending me gigs and giving me like, there's a contract here if you want to do this, consultancy or things. And I realized that actually, even though I was unemployed in the middle of a pandemic, I had a lot going for me because I had that support system. And I thought it must be a lot harder for those who don't have that right now. And yeah, I just had this idea. I started reading a lot about it. And then what are ways that I could create a networking program? What would that look like? How could we open more doors to more people that might not necessarily have those doors open right away? Because sometimes all you need is like literally one person to open one door. Like, people can do a lot for themselves. The industry, as you know, has a lot of systemic issues. So I think sometimes having one helping hand can go very, very far. That was definitely the case with me. So I just started talking to people that I thought would be interested in helping, people that I've met throughout my career. Like, I've been doing this for over 15 years. I know a lot of people now. And I just reached out to a bunch of people, and everyone was like, this is great. I've always wanted to do something. I don't know what to do, how to support. And then I planned this mentoring program that had networking at its core. So as part of the mentoring, the mentors have to introduce their mentees to people in their network, and the mentors would connect with one another as well. And the mentees connect with one another. I just wanted to create a big pool of people that are in this to support one another and have the same goal. Yeah, so that's how the idea came. And then after I had the idea, the action was quite fast because it was like a small program. It was a volunteer program. I thought that it could be over in 3 months. Let's get it done. Yeah, so this is how it all started. And we launched applications. I thought, oh, we're going to have 100 applications max. This will be super easy. I'll give 3 applications per mentor. They'll decide who they want to work with and that'll be done. But no, because we had like 100 applications in 24 hours and I was trying to read them all, and I was feeling incredibly overwhelmed because I was I was like, wow, how are we going to support all these people? Like, what's going to happen now? Like, I felt so responsible for everyone. And so I went trying to find some small partnerships that we could offer people who didn't get a mentor something. And then, like, can we do some events, like online events with the mentors, so people get, who at least wanted to talk to them, have a one-off conversation. So all these ideas started coming to my head, and then it completely derailed my life for like quite a few months until I decided, okay, we need to run this one more time, got some funding to do it. And yeah, then things just started to organically sort of grow into what Ally Networking is today.
So much has happened in the last 2 years, and you literally ran with it, you know, like you took what had happened and like you said, you tapped into your network and realized that you could give that to others. And I just love it. And it's so needed, because like you said, it can just take one person to open a door that can make a huge change to someone's creative career and their life.
For sure. Like for me, for instance, I've had very supportive parents most of my life, you know. They didn't know anything about the creative industries. They could not, like, I didn't even understand what the professions available were. Like, what are the roles available? It was all like a trial and an error. And when I was starting my first company, if I hadn't had people who were more experienced than me, who are actually my competitors in a way, holding their hands and being like, hey, this is who you should be talking to. This is who programs this. And if I didn't have those people, like, yeah, I think I would have made it, but it would have made it a lot harder for me to make it, you know, and it wouldn't be as nice either, because I feel like that's an important element of this as well, is that having a network is really important, because it's like how you build a support system around your professional life. And when you are an entrepreneur or a freelancer, which a lot of us are in the creative industries more and more, that can even be more important, because you don't have something set for you. So you need to even create that for yourself. Sometimes all you need is someone who will believe in you or will show you one thing or one trick, because there are so many strange barriers to access this industry where you don't understand what the terms are or how you should be writing your application, what your portfolio should be like, what are the websites to look for. Like, it's not clear, I think. Obviously, we can spend hours discussing why this is, but yeah, I wanted to do a little something to address the problem and support some people. Like, I've only worked in the creative industry, the only thing I know, so I can't like go supporting like lawyers or whoever else or nurses. Like, I don't know anything about their world, so this was what I thought I could do. And I think whenever you're thinking too much about yourself in general, I get really bored of that. After a while, I ate a lot of ice cream, watched a lot of Real Housewives, and I was like, yeah, I'm done. Like, let me think about someone else for a change. And I think that really helps you shift your perspective and see things in a new way.
All that is amazing. And I think actually what's really interesting about I Love Networking is that, and what you've just mentioned, is you are a creative producer. You take all these different kind of things and you put them together and create something. So I would love to hear from you, what are the skills you would say are needed to be a creative producer?
I think there are two main skills. One, you need to be organized. And I'm not a particularly organized person in my day-to-day life, but when you're doing a project, you need to be organized. And two, you need to actually enjoy working with lots and lots of different people. You will have to talk to, you know, the accountant. If you're working in events, you're going to have to talk to the electrician, and then the roadie, and, you know, then the artist, and then the manager, and then the sponsor. And you'll be shifting those conversations sometimes in a matter of seconds. So I think being able to talk to a bunch of people at any time and get things sorted for everyone and get all the ideas across from one team to another is key, basically. But yeah, I would say being organized. And I always tell people in the creative industries in general to become friendly with Excel, because it's very helpful. And I think, you know, learning how to read a budget will save you a lot of trouble in life.
And I touched upon it in the intro, and I talked about the company that you founded and then sold and doing creative producing work within the you know, creative and cultural industries within the UK. But I'd love to hear a little bit more of your backstory, you know, what you kind of studied at school, if you went to university, and then, you know, how you progressed up until kind of where you are now.
Yeah, so I was a very lost person, young person. I felt like no idea what to do. Everyone in my family pretty much went to like the same type of school. Everyone's like business school or whatever. And I've always loved reading. I love the arts. I love museums. I was a big geek in that way, even though I was slightly a party animal for my parents' troubles. But yeah, I was very in touch with all of that. I didn't really care at all about science or whatever, anything. Like, but I didn't even care about biology, which is supposedly interesting because it's about your own body and stuff. But I was like, yeah, whatever, books, you know. But I was never a great school person, as in like I didn't feel like I've learned that much in school. I've always learned more through doing things or going through things. For a while, I thought I was going to be, I wanted to be like a politician because I wanted to change things. So my great uncle is someone called Ignacy Sachs. He's a big intellectual. He was very involved in the early stages of the ideas of sustainable development. He, you know, managed to get kicked out of Poland twice, which should be some kind of record. And him and his wife, my aunt Viola, who was a literature professor, were people that I really looked up to all of my life. They were both very idealistic, but especially my uncle, he always believed in Brazil and in development and how we can have a more humane way of progress and all of those things, and thought, okay, if I want to change the world, I need to be in politics. So I started studying international relations in São Paulo, where I grew up in Brazil. Hated it so much. It was like, this is so bad. The only like lessons I liked were like about Foucault and like Nietzsche, like all the impractical stuff, you know. Like I hated like the economic lessons or the international law. I was like, ugh, so boring. But luckily I met some incredible people. One friend of mine who started taking me to the film festivals, and he was really into art, and he really helped to expand sort of my worldview and gave me lots of books. And my uncle at this time was like also giving me lots of books to read, and he was like, hey, don't worry, no one likes university anyway, just use it as a way to organize the books that you really want to read. But I was very restless. So I got an internship working for this charity that worked with the American Chamber of Commerce, stayed there for a while, learned a lot from my boss, then was like literally studying like so many random things on the side, like Shakespeare and like so many weird things. I got into a big obsession with like Dostoevsky, and like very classic, I think, young person trying to figure out the world, nothing very groundbreaking. And then I had this friend who was studying film, and he's like, oh, can you help in this film set? We need someone to help, I don't know, carry stuff and whatever. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I worked on his film set, then I worked on someone else's film set, like student film set. And I saw an opening to be like sort of like a intern at this art gallery. And I called this friend of mine from university and said, like, you just tell me everything you know about this art gallery. And then I nailed this interview, and then I started like working for like the most ridiculous salary, like so little money. But I worked for this art gallery, and it was also every other Saturday. And I started doing freelance everything on the side. So whatever creative project came my way, I would try to take it. So I did like makeup, and I did like set design, and then I did like set design for a student fashion show. And like, I just started taking as many jobs as I could. You know, I worked as like a producer for like a branding event. Like I just did as much as I could because I was really lost. And I remember crying so many times during this time, even though now I could say, oh my God, I did all these things. I worked as a producer since the early stages, but I had no idea what I was doing. And I was freaking out. And then actually I got this opportunity to work on this Brazilian film festival in Poland from all places, but it came through like other things. And so this person who ran the Brazilian film festival in Poland taught me a lot about producing, gave me a big shot because she sent me to organize everything. I had, again, no idea what I was doing. Like I was in my very early 20s and a lot of things went wrong. And I was in Poland and I do not speak Polish. Yeah, that's when I met some people that are still some of my big friends and mentors. And after that, I was actually at this film festival, the São Paulo Film Festival. And I was going to like tons of films during this time. And my friend, a friend of a friend, sort of like someone that had gone to school, like high school with my sister, but I also knew, was there, and he was a musician, and he was telling me that he had this concert that he was trying to like take to different places. And I told him I had some contacts because I've been working with this producer, and we started working like on some project. And then he invited me to produce this big project he had, which was like, it had projections and all of that stuff. It was like this big crazy idea he had had, and had 12 music videos. It was like a big project at the time. And the director of the whole project was someone called Rafael, and it was like instant love for these two people, and we just connected, I feel like, in a really deep level. And I had applied for a master's in film in the States. I had gone a scholarship for one of the universities, but then a lot of things were happening, and one day they sat down with me and they were like, we feel like you should stay and you should open a company and you should work with us. And we want to do this and this. And this friend of mine and this guy, Rafael, who had directed this project, had said, and also I wrote a play for young audiences in Brazil. And like one of the main characters is like gay, which, you know, this was 2010. Well, I don't remember, but I remember sitting down with my parents and be like, so I know how I applied for the master's and I got this one scholarship, but I'm not going. I'm opening a company and I'm working with all these crazy artists that I've just met. Yeah, I think it was the best decision I've ever made. They are, to this day, the love of my life and the people who inspired me the most. And I don't think I would have learned as much so fast if I hadn't done that.
Love that story. I mean, the way you told it as well, I just felt like so energized by it, because it is about creative people coming together and trying things. And, you know, I love that your honesty as well about, you know, you had moments where you were crying, like, what am I doing with my life? But looking back, all those things have kind of built up to where you are now. And how did your parents react when you were like, I'm not going to go and take the scholarship, I'm staying and I'm going to build this company?
So that's the thing. I had told them, like, this is how much I think we can make on the first 6 months. This is the project we have guaranteed. And I grew up in a very privileged household in that I had so much support. I had access to really good schools, but most importantly, my mom always worked a lot. She's 66, she's going to be 67 this year, and she just changed job. And my dad and my grandfather run their great-grandfather's business, so they're both entrepreneurs as well. And they were worried for me in a way, because they had no idea of this world. They couldn't really help me, but they were incredibly supportive. My dad likes to say that he did the back office for me. He taught me a lot. My sister helped me start using spreadsheets. She gave me an Excel crash course because she was working in finance at this stage. And they found a course for me to do on accounting that I could like understand like those things. And yeah, my dad let me use his house as an office. And I was, you know, living with my mom, so I didn't have to pay rent. So, you know, without them, it wouldn't have been, I mean, I don't know, maybe it would have been possible, but I did have a lot of support from them in those ways. And I think I just want to be very transparent about this, because a lot of people are like, oh my God, you opened your company, you were so young. But I also had no student debt and no financial commitments. I mean, I didn't see my friends for 6 months because I had no time, but I was doing it, you know, and they were really helpful in every way they could. You know, they would introduce me to people. I would say, does anyone know anyone here? And they would ask around, you know. So yeah, they were worried. And they also sat down with me and were like, okay, you need to like have a private pension if you're going to be your own boss and all of those things. So I feel very lucky that I had a lot of like financial education in a way that I could protect myself so that I could eventually move out and have my own life, you know, without them always around. But yeah, they were as supportive, I guess, as they could be.
It's amazing. I guess as well, like you said, they've got a kind of that entrepreneurial blood as well. So I guess it's that support, but also obviously a normal parental worry about their child, what they're doing. But it feels like, you know, you were doing so much and you were making sure that, maybe not consciously, but you were trying out different things and kind of, you know, adding things to your kind of skill set or your knowledge base. And I think what's really interesting with what you just described about your family, but also calling upon friends. And I love that, you know, it's so important to ask for help. You know, I think a lot of us forget to do that. And I think this is really connected to this notion about networking as well, because it's something that comes up time and time again, like on this podcast, in conversations with like colleagues and friends. And why you think networking is often perceived as being a bit cringe or a bit like a hard sell, as you mentioned at the beginning, within the creative sector?
So first of all, I think networking is a term that I only got acquainted with when I arrived here in London, as other terms that I've become acquainted with when I moved. Like, things in Brazil are slightly different, but I used to say when I was really much younger that I was a real life LinkedIn, because I was always like trying to make my friends date one another, or, you know, this friend needed a job, I was like, oh, you should talk to this person. And my mom was someone that all my friends would talk to whenever they needed a job or wanted a career change. So my house was always very full of people. My sister and I are very close. We're like tied to the hip, and we're only like 1 year apart. So her friends are my friends. So there was always a lot of people in my house, which, you know, we're always talking about everything and introducing people to one another. So maybe that's how I grew up in a way.
Your real life LinkedIn. I love that.
Yeah, I used to say this to people and I was like, it was a joke because I didn't use LinkedIn that much at the time, but it was, you know, probably starting out. But I think networking is definitely something that is used a lot in like corporate environments. And I think the creative industries have this thing of being like, oh, it's creative, so we're artists, so we do this for the love, which is great. But then it is actually an industry in the UK. It is not an industry in Brazil, but it is an industry in the UK. And, you know, you people should be, in any case, paid for their labor. And creative labor is a lot of labor, right? Like, yeah. At one time I used to go out with someone who worked in investment banking, and they supposedly have the worst hours, and I actually think I worked longer hours than this person I used to go out with, because I was always working. And, you know, I was working in the music industry, you work a lot of evenings, even if it's not the concert you're producing, because it can't be on all of them, but you have to go to other concerts to meet people, to see what they're doing. And this was something very prevalent in the industry, at least in the music industry. You would go to other events to meet the people who were decision makers, so the programmers, the funders. If you didn't have a relationship with them, it would be really hard to get any projects done. So you had to develop those relationships. And I didn't really have a big name for it at the time, but I understood that any business, and I think this is true for any business, is made of people. And there are like tons of creative producers out there. There's tons of event managers. People want to work with one event manager over another because of who they are, probably not because of their skill set, because a lot of people have similar levels. We were able to establish an amazing technical team, for instance, that without them I would have been lost. And so we got some jobs because people wanted someone who could assemble an amazing technical team, you know, to solve their problems as well. There's a lot of value. And I think in general, I don't think networking is cringe, because to me, it's literally about creating professional connections. And if you work in live arts, so music, theater, dance, especially, it doesn't matter if you are the most talented person in the world. You, as an artist, need a lot of people around you working on the same beat to make something happen. You know, like, even if you're doing a monologue, someone is going to be doing the lights, someone is in the box office, everything is working together. So I always found that was the most magical thing of it all. And I thought that understanding what everyone does was really important for me, because at one point, you know, I was managing big teams. And so I had to be the person understanding if something went wrong in one department, how that's going to affect every other department, right? And I think at the end of the day, networking is nothing more than just creating those professional connections and creating the people you'd like to work with and be surrounded by. Because as creatives, like, one of the best things I think of our industry are the people we work with, because we have amazing conversations, because we're inspired by them, you know, because we're learning so much from one another, I have no idea if that's happened in any other industry, you know, but most of my friends came from work. And when I came here, I understood that this idea of networking was a lot more, potentially a lot of people were like, cringe, oh my God, it's about selling yourself. And in a way, maybe it's because it's the image we get from films, it's the image we get from corporate world, and it's the image we get a lot of times from, you know, a male-led world as well, like a male-dominated world, where there is that energy a lot of times. And, you know, like this Wolf of Wall Street energy. And not everyone does deals like that. You know, you can make deals and you can be successful and negotiate in very different ways. And you can create connections and get things done and develop partnerships in different approaches, right? It's not all like I get this and you get that. It's not always quid pro quo. So I would tell people, whoever is thinking that networking is so intense, that you already have a network, you know, your friends and your family, we all have that to start with. And just to look at it as choosing, like if you were to work in an office, you don't necessarily choose the colleagues that are sitting next to you, but networking, you can actually choose the colleagues surrounding you forever for the rest of your life as a professional. And you have the power to decide that and to make your world a lot more interesting, hopefully, and supportive. So there's no reason not to. And we all connect with people. We don't connect with job roles. So it doesn't really matter what you do. It's, you know, more about who you are.
Oh, I love that. And I love you talking about that. It's really about collaboration, you know, coming together, and everyone's got different skills to make something hopefully wonderful, you know, that touches people. I think that's what the creative industries does.
Yeah, for sure. This is what I believe in.
Amazing.
For anyone starting on their journey, that's, you know, or wants to change or pivot, we have quite a few resources for the creative community at large.
I'm wondering if people are looking for more information, you know, what is it that you focus on and what can people expect, and what have been some of the highlights of running a podcast?
It started as an idea because, as I said, we had a lot of applications and not enough mentors to help everyone. So I thought, what if we just listen to the mentors tell their stories and how they got there and how they can be reached, because then people can at least find out a little bit more about these professionals, because everyone's bios, when you read them on LinkedIn or on a website, looks shiny and bumpless, but everyone has lots of bumps. And some of our mentors also lost their jobs in the crash of 2008. And one of our mentors who works at a big foundation, did like London School of Economics, then didn't get accepted into any masters and talks about crying in her bathtub for hours, you know. I wanted stories of women and non-binary people in the creative industries in general that people could learn from, basically what their careers were like, so what paths are available, because there isn't one path for the creative industry. And I think if you just show lots of different paths, like you do as well, Renee, on your podcast, it helps people to understand some ways that they can go about theirs. And I always ask people about like mistakes and fails and things that didn't necessarily go well, so that everyone sees that, you know, we all have those moments, and how do we go about them is where usually the magic happens. But I just wanted it to make an open space so that people, like any of the professionals there, they can go and reach out to them on LinkedIn, on the website or whatever. People are very honest. So Charlotte Williams, who runs a influencer marketing agency, who is really focused on the diversity of that industry, talks about what she would look like in a CV to hire, all of those things. And so people are really brutally honest in their conversations, which is really nice. I particularly love the conversation with Jade Coles, who is someone that I met because of the program and became a very close friend, and someone that I really look up to. And there's also a really funny conversation with Isabella Corazza, who was one of our first mentors as well, who's also hilarious. We couldn't be more opposite. She only likes to hang with objects and I like to hang with people. I've learned a lot from these conversations. I think this is what's the nicest, because it gives you no excuse to just talk to someone for an hour. You know, I love the podcast with the mentees because it's so funny and they are the most inspiring people, and it just gives me faith, if I can say that word, in the future of this industry, basically.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I love that. And obviously we'll put all the, like I said, the details in the show notes so people can find I Like Networking podcast. But yeah, obviously people can find that through the show notes as well. So look, I'd love to circle back to your career, and I'd be really curious to know, like, what's been the biggest challenge for you in your career and like what you did to overcome it, which you may have already answered. I'm not sure.
I think my biggest career challenge was actually restarting my career when I came to London. I didn't know anyone. I didn't understand the sector here at all. And I had never had a CV, didn't know what a cover letter was. And that was hard. I did my master's here. I interned at the same time. It was a very humbling experience. And I think that was the most challenging. It was like starting everything from scratch again, because there were a lot of hiccups and I wasn't exactly sure where to go. It was like a big new world, and London really makes you work for it. It's a hard city, I think, to get acquainted with, but I've grown like a lot through that. But yeah, it was definitely hard. And again, if I hadn't reached out to people, I don't know how I would have happened. Like on one of the placements I did as part of the master's, I worked for Lyft, which is the London International Theatre Festival. And one of the people that worked there, Jonathan, was, I think, an essential person in my life, because they did exactly this. He helped me by my hand and he was like, okay, I'm going to explain how this industry works. And he introduced me to a bunch of people. And so there was like him, some other people that were like, right, let's do this. Like, it's going to be hard, but you're going to get it. But at that year of like selling my company and figuring out that I needed to work in London, how was I going to do it, was probably one of the hardest, I think, actually, in my professional career.
Yeah, and it is hard when you, I mean, especially moving country, and we're both not native British people. You know, I'm originally from Australia, and London is definitely, I'll totally back you on that, a very challenging city. It pushes you up into the wall. It can be a love-hate relationship at first as well. You're like, yeah, I'm over here, but it's so tough. And yeah, so, but it's, you know, I think it's testament to your tenacity and also your love of people. You know, I think, you know, you just explained that you connect with people, and you're obviously very open to learning new things as well, which obviously has stood you in good stead.
Yeah, that was definitely good, but it was hard. Like there were lots of moments that I thought about quitting, but I feel like that's why I had to like get rid of the company, because he was always like, oh, I can just go back to this. And I was like, you know what, if I'm going to take London by storm, I have to commit to being here. That was hard. It was hard to let that go, the idea of who I was, and then start afresh. You know, it's always a difficult thing. You have nothing to hold on to. No one knows you here. It doesn't matter what accolades you've got, you know. So, but that's the reality for a lot of us, and for everyone starting, you know, and you can start again at any point in your life. It doesn't matter. It's not like an age thing, you know.
I think you're absolutely amazing, Isabel. I just love that. And I love that, like, you knew as well what you needed to do to make sure that you didn't just stay in your comfort zone, even if it was challenging. Do you know what I mean? With the company and things like that. So I love
that. Yeah.
I'd love to hear now more about, you know, where you are now and what you love about what you're doing now.
Yeah, so now I'm registered Ally Networking as a company. We've been working on a lot of strategy in the past few months on what the company needs to do to stay relevant and to stay, you know, creating impact for the industry. So this is why we haven't yet launched the mentoring, because really trying to assess what needs to happen right now and what support people need and what is our role in this, you know, how can we affect more change in the industry, like good change. So it's been a lot of work on that. So I think it's a sort of like transitional phase for us. We've done a really amazing mentoring program with Somerset House. So using people that are residents at Somerset House with two cohorts that they have of future producers and kickstart placements. And that's been really lovely to like apply our learnings with mentoring on a separate organization and engage people from different organizations with the idea of mentoring, because it's such a transformative tool. So we're now actually working on assessing how we can best impact the industry and serve more people, you know, so that's where we're at. So hopefully we'll be able to announce some things soon, but we're still very much working on those. And yeah, still trying to ensure that the community we have is served with at least a lot of support from our end and some positivity on things, you know, a little bit of a light way to talk about it, because talking, only thinking about your careers can get really exhausting, especially if you're like looking for a job, if you're unhappy at work. So trying to do it in a nice way.
Yeah, definitely. And like, careers are obviously very important to us, but we also have our lives outside our working life. So yeah, I think that's really poignant. It's been such a delight talking to you, and I love what you're doing with I Love Networking, and you know, all the amazing things and the kind of mentoring scheme and the podcast. It's just been a delight to get to know you a bit better. And yeah, and I just, like, I'm going to say it again, I think you're absolutely amazing. Before we wrap up, something I got to ask everyone before they leave is, you talked about as well when you first started out, and I had the same thing, you know, there's so many creative roles out there and not having any idea of what they really are or how they exist or how you access them. So I'm wondering, is there a job in the creative industry like you've been curious about, but you're not quite sure about what it is that role actually does? And then potentially I could find someone in that role and get them on the podcast and talk about it. And I'd also love it if you could recommend a woman or a person who identifies as non-binary for me to get in touch with and get on the podcast and have a chat about their career.
Oh my God, yes. I will send you a list of people later, if that's okay, of people that I can recommend. So you can take a look.
Yep.
What is something people do? Oh my God, that's nuts. I'm trying to imagine. I think you would have to be something in sort of either like publishing or like journalism or something, because those are the industries I think I know the least on. And I am actually insanely obsessed with journalist stories. Like, I read all the books about journalists, but I think there's so many things that we don't know about that world, like how do you become like a fact checker or like all these other nuances, like what's the difference between the editor and the deputy editor, like what do people actually do? Because I feel like everyone just sits around all day, you know, becoming an investigative reporter and writing articles, and I'm sure it's not that. Yeah, I think there's a lot in that world that I don't know, because those are the things I'm most passionate about. I think reading is what I like to do more in life, the most in life, so anything that's around that would be fascinating to me.
But I also love you've given me five roles there. So journalist, investigative journalist, editor, deputy editor, and fact checker. So I'm sure I can find someone in one of those roles. And I very much look forward to your list of people that I can reach out to. That would be fabulous. So yeah, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for all the amazing things you're doing and for pushing for change within the creative industries as well.
Thank you so much, Renee. Likewise to you. Your project is incredible. Thank you so, so much for having me on. I feel very privileged to have had this chat with you as well.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram, @greaterthan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11% artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.